You know who likes Chris Emma? I do. I'm Matt Spiegel, and I like Chris Emma.
I'm Ruthie Polinsky. I like Chris Emma.
Guys, anybody want in?
Let's see how it goes. After the hit, I'll weigh in on that one.
I'm Shane Reardon, and I think Chris Emma should lay off the donuts.
Or what was it?
Oh, no.
What was it?
Shane.
No, what did Grody, or what did Danny say?
You're just a mean person.
No, what did Danny say? Lay off the
what? I don't even know who you're talking about, for one. I don't know it, Danny.
No, help me out here. What did Danny say?
Honey buns.
Honey buns. Yeah. Honey buns.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, when you mess up the reference like that, it just seems like you're taking an unnecessary shot.
Yeah, that's on me. Hand up. Pointing a thumb, not a finger.
But yeah, one time Danny was talking about, was it Trevon Dexter who said he was losing weight because he was stopping eating honey buns. And Danny referenced it, but his syntax was all screwy.
Cut out the honey buns, Emma.
I mean, that seemed like an admonishment. And that's not how you treat somebody you like.
No.
No. Chris Emma is in for Mark Grody today because Mark Grody was in for Lawrence Holmes and Layla Rahimi today. What the hell's going on around here? What the hell's going on around here? This segment with Chris Emma is brought to you by Loyola Medicine. When things are at their worst, we're at our best. We need a seal here and a seal there. But that's Lombardi. Let's talk Halas. What happened to Bears practice today, Chris?
What's up?
Yeah. I made up my mind, guys. I like Chris Emma. And as a matter of fact, I adore Chris Emma. I stand Chris Emma. There you go.
There you
I have
go.
To wait till after the hit.
All right.
I feel better now. I feel great. Bears back to work, getting ready for the Texans on Sunday. Caleb Williams and the Bears looking to regroup and get their offense going. 93 yards, obviously well shy of what the Bears had hoped to come out with. And Caleb Williams got right into it. I really appreciated the way that he was honest and a little critical of himself in terms of what he wanted to improve. So let's get right to it. Here is Caleb Williams.
Yeah, there's multiple. I pointed out right after the game that it was around, I think I went on the lower end of like four or five. I think it was around six throws that, you know, obviously we would have hit those. Everything would have seemed a lot different. Throws that, you know, we hit in practice all the time, on simple routes, on intermediate, and then, you know, the one or two deep balls. You know, if you hit those, the game, everything kind of explodes, and, you know, things would have been said differently about how we played on offense. We're here getting better. Obviously it was week one for us. We came out with the win. We're really excited for that, like I said before. And then, just getting back out here, make sure we're focused on the small things, the details, whether it's myself of footwork drops, things like that, or, whether it's the routes, whether it's the run game, hand placements, all these other things when blocking, to make sure that, you know, as an offense, we're successful. Yeah, I would say the drops. Sometimes I rush my drop a little bit, not needing to. One specific route that that I can think of is Rome when he was, or I think it was a 10-yard route right over the ball, and I rushed my drop, and then tried to juice it in there a little bit and missed. I didn't need to. Just trying to hurry up and get the ball to him. Getting his hands fast as possible so he can, you know, make magic and do what he does. And so, just making sure, you know, trusting the drop, trusting the reads and things like that, and getting through them. I'd say that's probably the biggest thing that I'm focused on. And then, you know, my finishes on my play fakes or anything like that.
So as somebody who is often up there on the Bears beat, Ruthie, what does it feel like to hear the quarterback dissect his own play like this?
It's jaw-dropping. I think every time we hear him talk, and he's very monotone, and so sometimes I think you kind of get lost in the words, but at the same time he'll say something and he'll be like, wow, I just learned something listening to you, which you don't always get from quarterbacks who I think can get caught up in their like quarterback speech, you know, and like the way that they talk. But Caleb is very insightful and he's really candid. Obviously it's week one, right? Like, and they won the game, but I think listening to him dissect his own performance each and every week, and he'll do this even after games, Chris, like we'll hear him and we'll be like, how can you already talk about certain plays and things without going back? And a lot of times it's, I gotta watch the tape, I gotta watch the film. But Caleb is so on it. It's really fun to listen to, and I think it's going to be really cool to see how he looks at what he did and learn from it.
Yes.
And grow. How are the dropbacks this week? Let's let's talk about it, because you just told us that that's what you want to fix.
It makes me want to go back and watch like a super cut of his dropbacks and some of his choices and the trajectory of those six throws that he's talking about, and then compare it to what we're going to see on Sunday night. Does he look more calm taking time in the dropbacks, Chris?
Yeah, and I just like the idea that he's self-critical, but he's open. We've learned a lot about him, that he's not afraid to be himself, that he's somebody who's he's going to present things like this. And a lot of quarterbacks are going to be shy. They're not going to give you the insight. They're not going to really dive into their own performance like this. I like that he's willing to explain it. Yeah, it's my drops. I got to get better with this. That's the start of things. And then missing these throws, or like you said, he juiced that one throw. Like, I like the fact that he's willing to be an open book on this stuff and kind of let you into his own mind. And it makes you appreciate he wasn't that far off. The numbers aren't great. You don't want to see 93 yards in any game. It was disappointing, but it shows you he's not that far off.
And it really, to me, just screams confidence. Because he knows that he can fix it. Like, he's not going to tell you things that he's not good at if he doesn't feel like he's going to learn from it, right? Mm-hmm. Because then people are going to be looking for it and dissecting it. He's like, this is what I'm going to work on, and watch, next week, it's going to be better.
Oh, yeah. Look, he's comfortable. He's extremely comfortable. And that's in a one-on-one conversation or in a press conference where he's dissecting an underwhelming performance. Like, he knows he can be better and he wants to be better. I love that he's willing to peel back the curtain a little bit and say, here's what I'm working on. Here's why I think it's going to improve. And if it's a football fan, you can just appreciate hearing, okay, like, this is what's going through his mind and this is what he's really focusing on this week.
Yeah, you know, looking at some of the folks who've done breakdowns of the All-22 and looking at that Adunze play, where he threw that ball behind and low towards Rome Odunze, and there were others. There was one where to Keenan Allen, he was expecting Keenan to keep going on a route at one point, and Keenan stopped and sat down in the zone. So that's some same page stuff. He's given us a template. I expect to see improvement as soon as this week, and certainly within the course of the first four games.
Yeah, and let's cover the other thing that Caleb didn't mention. The offense has to be so much better around him. Coleman Shelton was really disappointing. Like, he got bulldozed over and over again to a point where play just didn't stand a chance and a drive didn't stand a chance. They couldn't get into third down and manageable consistently in that game, or really at all through that game. The only team last week in week one that had the worst third down percentage than the Bears, or then the Titans, was the Bears. Like, those are the two worst teams on third down last week, all in the same game. They need to be so much better. The protection needs to improve. We talked about Caleb's drops. He had drops on the other side. There was a Keenan Allen had a drop you want back. There's a lot of plays that could have helped him out. They were a few plays away from having that game look a lot better for Caleb Williams. But I appreciate that he's willing to put that on his shoulders and say, I'm going to get better from this.
So what else you got for us from Caleb, Chris?
Well, yeah, turn the page to this Sunday night, and it's the perfect kind of juxtaposition. You've got the reigning rookie of the year in C.J. Stroud and the Texans, who broke through last year and made the playoffs, had this great season. Stroud throws it for over 4,000 yards, which we know well what that means in Bears history. And then on the other sideline, there's Caleb Williams, who hopes to kind of replicate some of Stroud's season. And, like, fair or not, he's going to draw comparisons to Stroud all his rookie year. And there's that expectation, especially with this roster around him. So I asked Caleb Williams, what kind of motivation do you draw from C.J. Stroud and what he did last year? Here's Caleb Williams.
From his side, it's not motivation for me, from him. It's motivation to be able to help the Chicago Bears, you know, win games. You know, win as many games, get to the playoffs and, you know, win games there. So I was trying to do my best day in and day out, mentally and physically. You know, rest, make sure I sleep well, make sure I eat well, make sure, you know, doing all the right things throughout the week, and weeks to lead up to the game, to make sure that I'm prepared, to the best of my ability for my team, mentally, physically, and spiritually, you know, to be able to go out there and handle business the way we need. So, motivation, comes from, you know, myself and within this team, this organization, to be able to go out there and win games.
So look, it's a different formula for how the Texans found themselves, you know, suddenly competitive and ended up being a playoff team last year. But in his debut, C.J. Stroud, quarterback rating of 78, and we talked to, you know, our friend from Houston Radio earlier, who said the leap was in week two against the Colts last year. 30 of 47 for 384. That began a string of three straight games with a QB rating over 100. So week two is upon us. Ruthie's starting to get very confident over
No one said confident. I just said I'm starting to feel better.
Starting to feel it.
It was after we talked to our friend from Houston, Seth. Seth. Yeah. Our friend Seth.
Yeah, he's such a good
Seth Payne.
Seth Payne.
God bless.
We're very...
Some people like Seth, right?
Some people like Seth. You do, like, right, Seth. Chris?
Of course.
No, he was great. Seth. No, he was awesome, and he had some great insight.
I think you should lay off the honey buns.
Ruthie, you were saying...
Oh, I'm just starting to feel better.
Chris,
I think it was going to... It was going to be really hard for me to, like, go into this game and have any sort of hope and aspiration that the Bears would win it, just because we don't have any evidence that they could go in there and win it. But just, like, thinking about it.
You're starting to feel it. This is what happens.
Just, I'm not you saying they're going to win.
You talk yourself into a place.
I'm not saying they're going to win the game. I'm just saying I feel better about this game. And I really... It's bright lights, right? Like, it's Sunday Night Football. It's all eyes on you, and you're going up against CJ Stroud, and there's all the comparisons and the storylines, and everyone's, it's Caleb, CJ, let's go. This Bears defense is really good.
Yeah, they are.
This Bears defense is really good.
So you think hell could be coming to breakfast for Stroud and the Texans offense. That's what you're thinking.
And I just think Caleb's going to be better. If he doesn't turn the ball over... Listen. Yeah. I'm getting fired up. It's going to be bad tomorrow, because tomorrow I'm going to be like, "Yeah, they win by 30.
Ruthie is talking herself towards that Bears pick. We should let her make picks on the Scores website.
No,
for this week.
No. I can't handle that.
No. All right.
Not yet. All Maybe right. tomorrow.
Well, she has to drink the Wani bourbon tomorrow at 5 o'clock, right? Isn't that how it works?
She left some in the glass last week.
Okay. There we go.
Shane gave her a generous pour, and the bourbon just kind of lingered there for
Don't
a while.
Don't hurt my credibility.
I'm sorry.
You admitted it right away. You said it was a little heavy of a pour.
It was a little tough.
Fine.
I mean, listen, we're here for You're 4 working. Hours. Like, I hadn't eaten. I was like, woo-wee.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Wani, like, 2 sips, it's over.
Hee-hee-ha-ha.
He's a professional. Look, there's the defense is good. And Anthony Herron and I yesterday had a real good conversation, if I don't say so myself, about Daryl Taylor.
Yes.
Because that guy brings a different kind of thing to this Bears team. They didn't have, you know, the pure speed edge rusher, the poor man's Von Miller, you know, somebody who's just going to haul ass off the edge over and over and over until the tackle is leaning that way. Then he'll juke and come inside, as opposed to Montez Sweat, who's going to use the body and use leverage and angles. It's still fast enough to go around the outside, but Daryl Taylor is your proverbial speed edge rusher, and that dude showed up strong.
I think it's kind of funny how we spent so much of this offseason talking about, man, they're stacked on the offensive side of the ball, and a defensive secondary looks great, but what about the pass rush? And there it is, week one of the opener, and the pass rush is just firing while the other side of the ball is kind of struggling along. Like, that's football. They found something on the pass rush, though, and Daryl Taylor is a part of that. I'm going to preface this a little bit here, because when they made that trade on August 23rd, there's so much that goes on to the scouting process, right upstairs to the second floor of Hallis Hall with Ryan Poles and his brass. But there's really an important checkpoint that comes with this, and that's talking to people who have been on that Seattle coaching staff. Andre Curtis is the safeties coach, came from Seattle. Shane Waldron, obviously, coming from Seattle. The quick checkpoint is this guy a hits principal player or not? Is he somebody who's going to really fit with the style of play we want or no? And that's one of the final checkpoints to making this deal. Andre Curtis, Shane Waldron, the Bears staff, they signed off on this from their own experience around this guy, saying, yes, he's a culture fit, he's a system fit, he's going to work, and that kind of confirms everything they see on the scouting side. There it is, week one, Daryl Taylor's out there, 2 sacks in that game, the forced fumble, not to mention that sweet little walkaway like the Joker, just kind of like, I caused chaos on this play.
It was a Joker-style walkaway. It's an awesome thing. He's just slowly walking to the sidelines while the chaos is happening behind him.
That was beautiful, right? But so Daryl Taylor's new to this team, obviously showing up late in the preseason. He was asked today, what did you learn about this team? Here's Daryl Taylor.
I learned that this team is resilient. Like, sorry that I'm saying that, but I have to. Like, I learned that this team is resilient as and everybody was literally, nobody blinked an eye. We was all still excited. You know, any sudden change moment, we was ready to attack it and everything like that. So that just had me excited about, you know, everything that we have going here.
How many bleeps for Daryl Taylor?
Just two. Should have been more. But they just kept going.
Those are big bleeps. That's like F-word bleeps, right?
Those are F-word bleeps. Can confirm.
Tanny's got the ear for that.
I mean,
Tanny, can you confirm those are F-word bleeps?
Now, look here. I don't like that kind of talk. Now, just stop it. It upsets me.
Get over it. Get over it. They're football players. They're rough and tumble. They're vicious and they're mean and it's okay. We like it.
But it's funny because you were saying like when that trade was made, I remember, I think I was anchoring at Channel 5 at NBC 5 that day. And I remember the trade happens and we're like, okay, like don't know much about this guy. They traded a, you know, 6-round pick. It was kind of overlooked. You're kind of like, what's he really going to bring? They're kind of panicking. They don't have they want another defensive end. And like, they just found this guy, whatever. They were going to cut him. The Seahawks were probably going to cut him.
Right.
Anyway.
They got a crowded room or whatever. Right. So the Andre Curtis bit is a big, big deal.
Very much so. And I just think that's really, it's a great get for Ryan Poles.
Here's the other thing with this too, with making that kind of deal. The way the draft is structured now with so many guys sticking around to the college game because of NIL incentives, the bottom of the draft, those 5th, 6th, 7th round, it's not deep. It's not what it used to be anymore. Ryan Poles is kind of ahead of the curve, not really caring about using those picks in the draft. He sees much better value in using this, especially with a team right now in its competitive window trying to break through this year. He sees a guy like Daryl Taylor as much, much, much more important than what are we going to get in the 6th round next April. Mm-hmm. And so this guy checks all the boxes. And the other factor, too, is the motivation for Daryl Taylor. Talking to him a little bit more.
Contract year, man.
Yes, and that's a huge motivator. But he said, look, I got drafted by this team in Seattle, and they decided we don't want you anymore. I'm ticked off. Like, he talked mm-hmm. about that motivation factor. So you mentioned this week's contract year. You're cast aside by a team that brings you in, drafts you, and then lets you go. You're ticked off. You're ready to go show something. 2 sacks in the opener is quite a first impression.
Yeah, it's a really good get and a good fit by Ryan Poles, and it's nice to hear about the process checking in with the safeties coach, Andre Curtis. All right, what can you tell us about the injury report? A little distressing on Friday to see 3 defensive ends on the injury report, but then they were all available, and DeMarcus Walker played, I think, 95% of the snaps. Today, he was a did-not practice. So tell us about that part of it. We assume that's just a vet day for DeMarcus Walker. Your thoughts, Chris?
I believe so, too. I talked to him after the game on Sunday. Seemed fine. Was not getting checked down for anything. I think he's good to go. Probably the same for Keenan Allen. Matt Eberflus said it is a rest day for him. Went down with a heel injury late in the preseason. Obviously played through it on Sunday. Had a little bit of a reoccurrence with it, but it's nothing significant. I think he will be out there at least in a limited fashion tomorrow. Now, as for Rome Odunze, it sounds like, relatively speaking, it is good news, dealing with an MCL injury, but it sounds like it's the lesser kind. It sounds like it's grade 1. Matt Eberflus said they feel like they were fortunate in this case. I don't see him playing Sunday. I think there's a chance maybe he might even miss that following week, but 2-week kind of injury, let him get right. This is a rookie. This is a guy, you feel good about your receiver depth, and this is a guy you don't want to risk out there, especially with a knee. So I would not expect to see him on Sunday. I guess we'll follow up on that next week. But at the very least, they dodged a more significant injury.
Any guess from you as to whether Velus Jones is active or inactive this week based on Rome Odunze's likely unavailability?
I think the Odunze injury might force Velus into the lineup if they had plans to take him out of there. We'll see. It's the numbers game, right? He's not earned the spot, but the injuries will kind of keep him alive, I think, for another week. Tyler Scott will be so.
I think Tyler Scott will be active, don't you?
Yeah, all right. So maybe you do force Velus out.
I guess this is where I am, and it's okay to not know because none of us do. Khalil Herbert, Velus Jones, Tyler Scott. Like, of those 3, I don't think all 3 can be active. Last week, it was Tyler Scott who was inactive, and Khalil Herbert had snaps taken by Velus Jones. DeAndre Carter is not somebody that you want to use a ton at wide receiver, I don't think. Do they have an inclination to use him even more at wide receiver? 13 snaps for DeAndre Carter. He had 7 targets in 17 games last year with the Raiders.
I did not expect to see so much DeAndre Carter on Sunday. Look, I don't know. It's a good question. Right? They do like what Velus brought on offense. I know there was that horrific gaffe at kicking that ball away, but they like what he brought in that running back role. And gosh, it seems like every time you want to write him off, they find a new place for him and keep him around. So I don't know. He's got 9 lives, and I think he still might have one more left in this case. Tyler Scott, I think, will be up. And we heard Caleb Williams talking about how he believes in him, how he thinks he's somebody who could factor into this offense. You saw a lot of moments from him throughout training camp, so we'll see if he gets out there.
Yeah, we were just talking about that earlier, that I felt like Tyler Scott was one of the players that Caleb had maybe the most chemistry with during training camp. We kept seeing those highlight plays. The Bears kept putting out the highlight videos with Tyler Scott. So it's like, hey, maybe that was something that was working. Like, let's put him back out there.
I mean, yeah, talking with him in training camp, he said, like, it feels different now. Like, it's not just going through the routes. It's knowing what you got to do to break out a route. When the safety comes in on you, where do you need to go? It feels more natural for him. I was very surprised he wasn't out there active for week one. Again, we talk about that numbers game, forming the 46 from 53, and he's one of the odd men out in that, but I think they still really do believe in him.
Any other Bears nuggets, Chris Hema?
You know about it by now, Tyrique Stevenson, your NFC Defensive Player of the Week. And one more, the Bears will be wearing their orange alternates on Sunday. Orange helmets, orange jerseys, walking through the locker room today. The practice jerseys are orange as well, so they are ready to go. Caleb Williams' jersey is blue, switching off the orange, but they will be rocking those alternates on Sunday night in primetime.
Chris Hema, thank you so much. I feel good about my decision to like you. Tanny was in.
Me too.
And Shane, after the hit?
I was in before. I was in yesterday. I was in the day before. I was in last week.
Early
adopter. Last month.
Early adopter.
I've been in for 12 years.
Okay, wow. I didn't know you guys went back that far.
I'd like you guys too, for the record.
Oh, thanks. We didn't ask. We feel good about ourselves. Ruthie said, I like myself. She said that earlier. she's really digging herself. Thank you, Chris Hema. Great stuff.
Thanks,
take care.
Chris.
All right. You're going to hear from Matt Eberflus about an emerging potential star on that defense at a position where they're already strong. And also, the owner of the worst team in professional sports has spoken. We'll discuss that as it's Spiegs and Ruthie Polinsky on the Scores Afternoon Show.
Well, if I were a fan, I'd be pissed. I'd be very angry.
Right, you're right.
Today, the Chicago White Sox lost. They lost for the 113th time.
In a row?
No, not in a row. But they were shut out for the 17th time. I did see this latest nugget. The last 28 times they have played at home, they are 1-27. If you went to buy a ticket and went to see them play a home game, they are 1-27 in their last 28 home games.
There aren't very many people that have gone to see them play at home. I'll tell you that much.
You know, at someday it will stop being jarring to see pictures of a once proud franchise when the crowd is as empty as it was today. Someday it will stop being jarring. Today it was still jarring.
It was.
To see it cross my timeline. They're 33-114. They are 45 games back in the division. In the wild card, they are also 45 games back. They are 81 games under 500. They're actually 51.5 back in the division. Excuse me. They're 81 games under 500. Folks, they're bad. It is the worst franchise in all of sports. And I believe that they are in the worst state of any professional sports organization in the history of this city. That I believe that. And they're up there with the Bill Wirtz Blackhawks in that one before the turnaround when Bill died and Rocky took over. But this is woeful. They are owned by Jerry Reinsdorf, and his vanity project is not going well. Jerry knows it. And after Chris Getz released a very uninspiring statement and had some comments the other day, Jerry Reinsdorf has released a statement today after loss 113. Quote, "Everyone in this organization is extremely unhappy with the results of this season. That goes without saying. This year has been very painful for all, especially our fans. We did not arrive here overnight, and solutions won't happen overnight either. Going back to last year, we have made difficult decisions and changes to begin building a foundation for future success. What has impressed me is how our players and staff have continued to work and bring a professional attitude to the ballpark each day despite a historically difficult season. No one is happy with the results, but I commend the continued effort. I expect to have more to say at the end of the season."
Me too.
I, too, will have more to say at the end of the season.
Is there more to say?
No,
is there more to say than what we haven't already said?
Right.
They're not going to be worse. They're already at rock bottom.
Right.
My expectation is that they lose 80 to 90% of their remaining games. That's not worse. That's just what it's been.
Yeah, there's not many games left. They've now played, so they're 33-114, or they're 33-113 now today. So 146 games, they have 16 left to play.
114, yeah.
114. Okay, 140. So 15 left to play. They will steamroll past the all-time loss record of the 1962 Mets. The 1962 Mets, Ruthie, were an expansion team with a whole bunch of has-beens and never-wases. This is a team in the middle of their life as a major league franchise. They've been around for a long time. They're a team that has a farm system that was supposed to be building itself over the last several years as they were trying to win games. This is horrifically bad. It is the worst state that I've ever seen a Chicago franchise in.
So this statement is so interesting to compare to Chris Getz's comments, compare and contrast and kind of put them side by side. One saying, you know, we knew it was going to be bad. And the other saying, it's not bad. I mean, it's bad, but, you know, continued effort. Commend the continued effort. I feel bad for fans. That's all I have to say.
If you would have told me we were going to end up flirting with a record, I would have been a little surprised. Now, if you would have told me prior to the year that we would have ended up over 100 losses, 105, 110, I wouldn't have been as surprised. This is the cards that we've been dealt at this point, and you try to make the best of it. And I think it's an opportunity to embrace the situation that we're in.
So they knew they were going to be bad, but then Jerry says everyone in this organization is extremely unhappy with the results of this season. But your general manager said you knew you were going to be bad. So,
well, they knew they were going to be bad. They didn't know they were going to be this bad. And they should be embarrassed, and they are embarrassed. And those words, I'm sure, ring unbelievably hollow to passionate White Sox fans.
Why does he think he can say that? Brother, don't say anything. Just say, we are horrible. We're going to do our best to try to fix it. Hmm. We see where we're lacking. We're going to fix that. We see what kind of players we should be acquiring. We're going to try to fix that. Just tell me you're working on it. Don't admit, yeah, we knew we were going to suck. Sorry, brother. Like Jerry said, this is the quickest way. Hiring internally. I got a guy who knows our system. This is the quickest way back to the promised land. Chris Getz couldn't build a little league team.
Jerry has not known for a long time now how to build a winning baseball organization. Short term, long term, zoomed out, close up. He has not known for a long, long time. His methodology of loyalty hires and treating people well and believing in them and giving them certain freedoms but certain other restraints as he tries to model everything after his beloved Brooklyn Dodgers that left him when he was a little boy, his methodology is a horrific, out-of-date failure in Major League Baseball. It's got no place in today's game, and he continues to screw this thing up. I wish I could point out hope for White Sox fans. I don't know what it is.
The best thing White Sox fans have is Chuck and Ozzy. they're the best. It's just, it's great. And honestly, perhaps the historically bad season has gifted us a new version of Chuck and Ozzy, you know? And so we're getting this like great form of entertainment from a historically bad season. This is Ruthie's silver lining. There you go.
Bring it to us.
That's it. Chuck and Ozzy get to be peak Chuck and Ozzy, a version of themselves we've never seen.
I think Ozzy had Chuck drinking honey today on the post game show to like sweeten him up a little bit because he was too salty. Chuck was too salty today.
Really?
Yeah. So they're trying. Yeah.
Oh my they're the God. Best.
A silver lining contribution from you, Ruthie, is very appreciated and welcome on the show because we don't really look at the positive of anything. I'd say
positive popo.
There you go. There you go.
Dino from Mount Greenwood believes that the lawyers got involved. That gets his comments saying he expected this contradict Reinsdorf's statements when he hired Getz, and that this is some kind of way to try to cover the ass of like, no, we weren't trying to be this bad. We weren't trying to tank. I don't believe that's necessary anymore. I don't believe that's necessary anymore to pretend you're not tanking. It's just a terrible time in baseball to tank when the rules no longer work to your advantage.
They didn't try to cover up for Chris Getz when he said before the season started that I don't like our team. He said, I don't like our team.
Yeah, that was
after Reinsdorf said, this is the guy who knows the team the most.
That's
put
a
him
quote.
There.
Yeah, that's a quote.
And then a full calendar year almost after saying, I don't like our team, then they fire their head of international scouting.
Yeah.
It was almost a year.
Yeah.
I mean, it's crazy. And there are some very good pitchers in the minor leagues, but there are no bats. And the problems are so heavy and so holistic that it's impossible to have hope and believe that once these decent pitchers get to the minor leagues, that things are going to be better. I don't see it. And I love hope. I believe in hope. I believe in a thing called hope. But I'm having a lot of trouble getting there. Texture says, are Chuck and Ozzy coming back? I think so.
Oh, to the new network?
Yeah.
My understanding is that will make a transition.
That they will make a transition. Ruthie Polinsky has worked over there at NBC Sports Chicago.
I just got a really sad email. Can I tell you about it?
Please.
I just got an email from my YouTube TV account.
Oh, I thought it was about Big Dog and Little Dog.
No. Well, everyone's going to be really excited to meet Big Dog tomorrow.
It's true. Sorry, go ahead.
We are writing to let you know that starting Monday, September 30th at 11:59 p.m., your NBC Sports Chicago regional service, including the 4K NBC Sports Chicago regional channel, will no longer be available on YouTube TV. Ugh. Please note that NBC Sports Chicago regional service is ceasing operations for all distributors.
Oh, man. Does that have a little air of finality to it? I see by the grimace on your face.
Yeah, that kind of hurts.
Is this how you found out?
Basically.
It's like Ben Finfer being on the air when the game went under.
Yeah, Finfer and Quigley.
It's hard for a lot of people, me included. Just so many great people that work there, and it's unfortunate. But lots of hope for the new place. Mm-hmm. Hopefully that's a good operation and things go well for everyone and they bring a lot of good people over, I hope.
Yeah, for reals. Lots of really good people over there.
Yeah.
I've been over there a ton to do shows during the years and through the years, a long, long time.
Yeah,
that place has been churning out a lot of good stuff.
Someone who lives in a different city was a texted in asking, they were looking for the football after show on YouTube, and I'm like, welcome to our the end of the football after show. But it is great to see Lance and Alex on CHGO.
I don't know what that is or who that is or where that is.
Back to your email you got. I got the same email, Ruthie, and one thing that we forgot to mention is as of October 1st, you'll no longer be able to access content in your library that you may have recorded from that channel. So if you want to go back and watch some of these White Sox games, you got to do it now.
Oh,
a lot of good ones on there.
I thought you were going to say, if you want to go save any of your material, go do it now. Yeah, I record all my shows.
You do?
I like myself.
We've established that. The listeners like Ruthie too. It's a big old like party here on Spiegs and Polinsky.
We'll like each other soon here.
Matt and Ruthie, the Score Afternoons show. So, oh God, I'm going to get it right.
That's not a good one.
I'm totally going to get it right. The Fluce on Reek next when we come back.
On third down and six. Here they come. Gordon's coming. Levis gets wrapped up. Flings it ahead. It's picked off. Tyreek Stevenson will give the Bears the lead on another defensive play. And it was the former Titan DeMarcus Walker who got to the quarterback, wrapped Levis up, and Stevenson housed it for the first Bears lead of the game.
Well, it's all that pressure that gave DeMarcus Walker a chance on the edge. And Levis just falls right into his lap right there. You cannot make a bad play worse.
Definitely grateful for the experience, but honestly, I feel like I got more room to work on, and I got some things that I need to, you know, go back on and look on and, you know, step up my game. But definitely happy for the accomplishment and recognition. But definitely want to give a big shout out to this defense, because, you know, without this defense stepping up and, you know, standing on our standards, and, you know, I wouldn't have this award.
Tyreek Stevenson is the defensive player of the week in the NFC. How about that?
I love that guy.
He's
great.
I want to hear more about that, because I've always liked him. Georgia is where he went to school first, but then went home to Miami, where he went to high school, to play at the University of Miami because he didn't like the way that Georgia was using him. And he absolutely crushed it there. And the Bears have a good eye for corners, man. Ryan Poles has a good eye for corners. Lots of good depth on that team. And Tyreek is playing his ass off right now. What do you dig about him?
I covered Tyreek at the University of Miami. How about that?
How about that?
And always just a great guy to go to. As you know, you've heard him talk. He's a pro and kind of just has been that way. And it was not always rainbows and sunshine at the U for him. But I will say that last year, it was just really fun to kind of watch him come into the league and prove very quickly that he belonged. And I remember talking to him at the end of the season because he, in my book, should have been a higher, especially the way the Bears defense was playing at the end of the season last year. He should have been more of a consideration for Defensive Rookie of the Year. Obviously, there were a couple of good ones last year, but just the way that he was able to affect the game the way he did, I loved going up to Tyreek Stevenson at the end of the season. I think it was maybe locker clean out day. And I went up to him and I was like, man, Tyreek, like, it was just so fun to cover you and watch you play this year. And he said to me, he was like, Ruthie, I wish I had more time. He was like, I wish I had a couple more games. He was like, it was tough. Like early on, it was tough. And if you remember last year, he was really physical. He was a very physical player and there were a couple of flags and he really had to rein in his discipline. And that was a big part of his story early on in the season. And then he was making some great plays.
Yes, he was.
Towards the end of last year. And then to be able to carry it into this season, I'm just so happy for him.
Here's Matt Eberflus from today talking about the emergence or the excellence or just at least the recognition of Tyreek Stevenson.
Obviously very proud of Tyreek. And really, I'd say that's a unit really award for that particular week, being the NFC Defensive Player of the Week. So he's excellent by him and the whole group. He loves competition. He's very competitive. He's a very physical corner. And he loves to compete, you know, and you can see that, how fiery he is out on the field. He welcomes that. It gives him joy to be able to go out there and compete. And you can see that every day. I like the way he tackles. I like the way he hits. I like the way he plays. And that's why he's here. He's a guy that loves football. And to me, it's like, it's just an honor to be able to coach him, you know, and work with him. Because I do like that, his inside, he's got a fire that burns hot, and I like that.
Man, that's cool.
Love it.
That's a really cool soundbite. Flus is, he's such a damn football coach, man. And sometimes that's used in a negative way or pejorative, like, oh, he's so football coachy. Yeah, he is. He loves guys who bust their ass, and he loves guys who have the technique as well. He loves the way he tackles and loves the way he hits. That's awesome.
And I love also John Hoke being the cornerback's coach, I think, is a huge part of this story. And love John Hoke. So much just respect for him and his career. And he, I think, deserves a lot of credit for being able to rein in Tyreek Stevenson, yet keep his physicality but to really just kind of hone in on the technique and making sure that he's not crossing any sort of line anymore. It's just been fun to watch.
Man, they got two corners who can both really be trusted as solo cover corners, you know, which gives you a lot of options. Go ahead and let Brisker blitz a lot if need be. Let Brisker be, you know, an extra linebacker in some instances because he's such a good hitter. I hope you're watching on Twitch where Ruthie just did the Brisker move. What's that? What is that again?
It's tweet tweet.
Oh yeah, that's what it is. We got a lot out of Ruthie today.
Duh, Bears.
She did that early on. Now she's dancing. Tomorrow we're gonna meet Big Dog.
Big Dog's coming.
That's right. Spiegs and Ruthie and Mercedes Lewis. No. Big Dog is a stuffed animal that Ruthie's had since she was a tiny,
born.
Tiny girl. Since you were born?
Literally fresh out of the womb.
You sure you want to bring it?
How is Big Dog with other dogs? Because I think my dog Willie is going to stop by.
Big
Dog's cool with other dogs.
Big Dog loves.
Okay.
How's Willie with other dogs?
Depends on how she wakes up. I'm going to judge it by how she wakes up tomorrow morning.
I don't think you want to risk Ruthie Polinsky's babyhood stuffed animal with a live dog.
We'll see.
We've had Big Dog for 31 years. He's been through a lot. So
yeah, he has. And he's still a great blocker. Great inline blocker. See how much they gets used in 13 personnel. Thank you so much to our guests on the show today. Chris Emma.
Good.
He was on the show. It was really good. Pat Tomasulo was on the show. Check out laughyourfaceoff.org. Bid on items. Seth Payne, our dear friend, whose name we will never forget, joined us from Sports Radio 610 in Houston. Oh, Shane Reardon did a great job today. Chris Tannehill is a marvel.
Mm.
He's the most stable of all of us. And Ruthie Belinsky, what a joy to have you. Thank you so much.
I'm back tomorrow, too, not just Big Dog. I'm coming, too.
Ruthie is bringing Big Dog. I'm going to do I'm gonna do a whole segment with Big Dog, though, at some point. Or maybe we'll let Big Dog drive a topic. See what he's into, okay? All right, good talk. For Ruthie Belinsky, I am Matt Spiegel. Thanks for listening to 670 The Score.
All right, I got to go here, guys. I got something.
The Bears.